You're tuning into the Active Mom Podcast with physical therapist, Dr. Carrie Pagliano, a real mom's guide to all things postpartum return to workouts after baby. If you're a postpartum mom, coach, trainer, or physical therapist looking for answers on how to get back to running, CrossFit, yoga, Pilates, HIIT, you name it, without the fear of pelvic floor issues or doing something wrong, this is the podcast for you. Let's start the show. All right. There was a recent article published lately about sports bra restrictions on respiratory mechanics during exercise. And I have never seen so many moms, so excited about hating their sports bras and talking about it. So fortunately, I reached out to the author, Shalaya Kip. She agreed to come on the podcast. So we're going to trash some sports bras, get some good evidence, and then talk a little bit about her athletic career because she's A, stupid smart, and B, really fast. So Shalaya, thanks for joining us on the Active Mom Postpartum Podcast.
Well, thanks so much for having me. I'm excited to be here.
Okay. Tell us a little bit about who you are, where you're from, what you do.
Sure. Currently, I'm a postdoctoral researcher at the Mayo Clinic in Rochester, Minnesota. My background PhD work is in respiratory physiology. I'm an exercise physiologist at heart, so I love exercise. And that all stemmed because I am an athlete myself. Specifically, I'm a runner. You would classify me as a middle distance track runner, but really, I like the longer distance stuff. And I'm a mom of two little babies.
And just got through a time change. Yeah. Thank you, daylight savings time.
There's some extra bags under my eyes.
Oh, yes. No, our whole family this week is struggling a little bit. So. Yeah. All right. So what inspired you to take your respiratory research and be like, hey, let's look at sports bras?
Yeah. So like I said, I have this respiratory background. I think a lot about the respiratory system and exercise. And I think it's kind of a natural extension for any woman that exercises in a bra to, you know, kind of wonder, what is it doing to my chest? I'm definitely one of those runners that, like, I get done with a workout and I want to rip my bra off. Mm-hmm. Like, you know that feeling? You're just like, get this thing off me.
Oh, yes.
And so a lot of it made me wonder, like, what is this really doing to my pulmonary function? What's going on in my respiratory muscles? I also am really interested in running economy, which is essentially how much oxygen our muscles use or how much metabolic energy they use, where if you put them in kind of some, bad situations, they're going to have to use more energy. And that's never good for athletic performance. So I kind of thought maybe those two things together might go hand in hand with sports bras.
Yeah, definitely. The two worst parts of my day, one is figuring out what's for dinner. And then the other is getting on my sports bra after coming out of the shower. You're like strangling yourself.
Exactly. Yeah.
I am finally at the age. I do love winter because winter, you can go out in a t-shirt, sweatshirt, coat, no bra, no one's the wiser. Goodness, yeah. Sorry, kids. I showed up to multiple basketball games this winter, totally braless because it's not worth it.
Me too. Finished swimming lessons this like winter. It's like, okay, we're good. Yeah.
No one needs that. Yeah. No, I think it's one of those things that especially, you know, even if we, like my daughter is 10, she wants to wear a bra because her friends are wearing it. She doesn't have anything. And I think she bought one, we got her like one of those like Old Navy ones and it's chafing and riding up. And she's like, is this supposed to be uncomfortable? I'm like, yeah, kind of welcome to the, you know.
Aww.
But I mean, we don't really learn from a young age how to self-select a good fitting bra. And I thought that was such an interesting part of your study is that it's based on self-selection. So we're doing a really crappy job. So tell us a little bit about why you decided to do that.
So I should say, like, there are other studies that have looked, you know, do sports bras impact respiratory function? And normally they use a professionally fitted bra. And in my mind is I have no idea what that means. And I have never been fitted for a bra. And my guess is most women haven't either.
No.
And so I said, well, why don't we just have women come in and tell us what bra they wear? And, you know, start with that as our ecologically relevant condition. Mm-hmm. And then we can kind of change some things. Do you want me to tell you about how invasive we made this study for the women?
I think we saw the video, but please tell us. And thank you for putting your body forth to science, by the way.
All these women, they were all fantastic. I am so thankful for these ladies. One of the things I really wanted to do was we wanted to quantify the mechanical work the respiratory muscles were doing. And so the video I posted was of one of my colleagues placing a balloon catheter up my nose It goes down the nasal passage through the esophagus. We place it all the way to the stomach, and then we actually pull it up. So it's about a third of the way up the esophagus and sits kind of really nicely against the lungs. So we can estimate the pressure the lungs are generating. When we have a pressure and volume together, we can calculate a mechanical work that's being done. So these women did all of the testing with these balloon catheters in them. And like someone pointed out to me, they're like, well, did you take it out during rest? And I was like, no, they had to sit there with it in, during rest. They are given lidocaine, so that kind of helps numb everything. But yeah, so fantastic women. And now we'll get back to kind of the crux of what we were doing. And so they came in, they picked out a self-selected bra, and we did two things. One, we tightened it, so really even more so compressed the chest. Mm-hmm. And then we also did a condition where it was actually loose. And I think our results about the loosening of the bra were maybe the most interesting from my perspective, because none of the women actually complained when we loosened the bra. It wasn't too loose, right? Like, so your breasts are moving more. Like, there's a reason we wear bras. You know, we have to restrict the breasts in some sense. But we loosened it. A little more motion was happening, but it wasn't uncomfortable. And the biggest thing was breathing mechanics were less impaired. And they were using kind of less oxygen. So their economy or their efficiency was improved.
Now, when you're loosening them, are you loosening them kind of around the chest area or straps or kind of what was the, was a general loosening?
Yeah. So we talked about that. We said, where should we loosen? Because you can loosen in so many planes. We did just underband. Yeah. Mm-hmm. Yeah. So many more studies could be done in this area.
Well, yeah, I was thinking of you this morning because I happen to wear a bra to the gym that I just need to get rid of. And it had, you know, I went to take it off to take a shower and I had the marks digging in, you know, my shoulders. And I'm like, I only had it on for an hour and a half. It wasn't that long. And, you know, I didn't need a ton of support. And I'm like, why? Like,
why am I doing this to myself?
Just get rid of this.
We all have those bras, right?
I know. And it's, but it, again, like, it's one of those things that, you know, we go through different bra sizes in so many phases of our life, but we don't want to go out and buy a new one because it's annoying. And I mean, the only story I ever remember, I don't know if you remember, Are You There, God? It's Me, Margaret. And so they updated it for the movie that came out. They didn't do like a lot of the stuff of the original book, but like, you know, trying on like the training bra, like, I feel like that's the only time you got advice.
Yeah. And then good luck the rest of your life.
Right. Well, and recently, and I think everybody kind of accepts, okay, when you're pregnant, your boobs get bigger. When you're breastfeeding, your boobs get bigger and then they go like flat inverted pancakes. And then I just started HRT in the fall and now all of a sudden I have boobs again, which I'm really unhappy about. And when your paper came out, I was like, crap, if I wasn't looking for another reason to buy a bra, like, this is it.
You might have given you a reason to go out and get a new bra, didn't we?
Exactly. Yeah. So kind of as you're doing this study, like, what other questions are coming up in your mind of like, oh my God, I need to study this. I need to study this. Cause I have a few.
Yeah. Well, so I would say one, we did select kind of highly fit elite women to do the study. Mm-hmm. And my rationale for that was I wanted big expansions of the chest wall. So, you know, that band put a lot of restriction on it. And we really need more studies with women of different size breasts.
Yes.
Like you said, like through the lifespan, even that breast tissue is going to change. So there's a lot more that could be done. Ours is just kind of skimming the surface of what's actually happening to women. Another thing I thought a lot about was we go into a dressing room and we try on a sports bra and we're like, great, feels good.
Right.
We would never do that with running shoes or something, right? We go, they fit us with running shoes and we run around the store in them. Yep. And I kind of think like, should we be in the dressing room, like trying to go, how does this feel when I'm actually breathing hard? Right. Like, because resting isn't the condition we use a sports bra in.
Well, I think a lot of us too, like, you're like, okay, I know what size I am in this store. And then I hate shopping. So I'll just like go online and be like, oh, well, you know, Athleta, I'm this size. And then unfortunately you get it sent to your house. And of course they change the sizing, or of course we've changed it, or it's a combination of the two and it doesn't fit, but you wear it anyway, because you don't want to return it because that's a pain in the butt. Yeah. So I think lots of times we don't even try it on.
It's true.
We just don't. But yeah, there's actually this whole, I'm sure you're aware of it too, there's this whole like subscience of breast mechanics and motility. I've been trying to get this researcher from Australia to come and talk to me because I'm like, okay.
Julie Steele?
No, it's a different one.
Starts with a B. Yeah, there's some good ones down in Australia.
Yes. Well, there's a lot of things in Australia. Lots of good physio stuff too. But no, it's just one of those things that, like, I think we don't realize that there's this whole extra science that we need to study because we haven't had sports bras that long.
Yes, that is really true. Yeah.
No, I think I was reading, Let's Get Physical by Daniel Friedman, or it was Up to Speed with Christine Yu, basically, where they were talking about why.
That's fantastic.
Yeah, both really awesome. Like, I think it's so important to understand the history of, you know, how women got sports bras, and it was based off of basically a jock strap.
Exactly. That's the jog bra. Yeah.
Right. Exactly. And so now I feel like there's so many options, but again, we're still not doing a good job fitting it. So what were kind of the take homes for you when you finished this study?
Yeah. So I was one of the women that participated in the study. I had very much in mind. So I should have disclosed this earlier. This study was funded by Lululemon. I think the results apply to any bra, so that's not really as important as a specific product testing. But something I realized was I had always been like, I am a Lulu 6.
Right.
And I realized I could go up to Lulu 8 and it was still just as comfortable.
Oh, interesting.
And it felt better. And it's like I just hadn't let myself decide like, hey, I might need to change sizes. I might need to refit myself. And so, yeah, I've changed my bra size since. So that was one of my takeaways. I don't know why, but maybe as women, we always want to, you know, have that smaller size. And so I don't know if I was always just trying to squeeze myself in or what, but it was like all of a sudden it's like I had the option to wear an 8. Like, why am I not? And
right.
And then I was like, this is comfortable. And I went for a run and I'm like, this is way more comfortable. And
oh my goodness.
Interesting. Yeah.
Yeah. No, I'm thinking I had a friend in college that we went to the mall and I think it was when size 0 came out or something like that. And we stood outside the store and she's like, I'm gonna stand out here to watch the woman that comes and buys the size 0. She's like, I hate her. I'm like, who came up with these sizes anyway? Who came up with them? Well, for our community in pelvic health, there's a lot of conversations that we've been having probably more recently, probably like the last like 6-7 years on pressure and breathing and the impacts on the pelvic floor. Because for a really, really long time, we were just like all about down there. And you know, when we started looking at kind of lifting mechanics, pressure mechanics, all those sorts of things, then we started to look up at breathing and, and kind of that correlation. So that's where you got our attention quite a bit because pregnancy.
Pressures in the abdomen you're looking at or?
Intra-abdominal pressure. Okay. So our thought is that if you have uncontrolled intra-abdominal pressure, or you've got too much kind of squeezing from the top, so to speak. So actually, let me grab my chicken. It'll make more sense. My kids love these. They squirt the bottoms out of them all the time. So this is kind of a model that we use where it's like, okay, this is diaphragm here, belly, back, pelvic floor. If we're getting tightening from the top, does that increase pressure downwards? And then, you know, does that impact symptoms? But also, do you get a counter activation of the pelvic floor to kind of counter that pressure, control it. And so that's where we kind of get into the conversation about
an important pressure to think about.
It is. And I think also, you know, if you look at pregnancy, obviously we get a lot bigger rib angle and a lot bigger expansion and our respiration does change. So that's right. I want to circle back for you being an athlete and a mom, kind of going back and reflecting, like, what kind of changes did you experience that you were kind of looking at this, you know, through this fresh new mom lens, but also you're pulling your PhD lens into this too. What was your pregnancy and postpartum experience?
Yeah. Well, so you said the first one that was really interesting to me is I didn't understand how much my rib cage was going to change.
Think
so much about, you know, the lower half and realizing that that angle of the rib cage is going to change. Your rib displacement changes, all those things they're quite new to me. Also there's, if you know what dyspnea is, it's, breathing discomfort or, you know, feeling of breathlessness. I had never really understood what dyspnea was. Like, you know, I read it and it's in clinical populations and then I was pregnant and exercising. And I was like, oh, dyspnea is real. Like feeling breathless running all the time was a very new experience.
So when, mm-hmm. when you're experiencing that, like what's going on in your little PhD head at that point? You're like,
I came back and I told one of my colleagues, I'm like, wow, dyspnea is a real phenomenon. like it wasn't like I didn't believe it, but I had just never experienced it and never understood kind of what the big commotion was. And then I was right. like, you're right. You know, when there's not room to breathe and the lungs can't do something, like it's uncomfortable. You want to stop exercising.
Yeah. That's kind of like, so I was a pelvic floor PT before I ever had kids. And so you think you know about stuff and then you experience it and you're like, oh, that's not at all what I thought it was.
The other thing was, I was like, why don't we do more studies on pregnant women? I did not want to do a single study when I was pregnant. I was not feeling good the whole time. And so that was another realization. I knew it was hard to get through an ethical review board, but then two, as a pregnant woman, I was realizing like, no one's going to, you know, touch me. Like I really didn't feel up for any of that with my first pregnancy.
So. Yeah. I think the first, there's also, like you said, you're kind of nervous about everything and you want everything to go right. I think by the time we have a couple more kids, we're a little bit more mellowed out. Yeah. We're not as anxious about everything. When you came back after your first, did you start running again relatively quickly or exercising or what did you do?
Yeah, my first actually was really simple and straightforward. At 4 weeks, I asked my doctor if I could run and she's like, Shalia, just wait a couple more weeks, please. Like, I know you're ready. I know you have a good background, but she's like, what's 2 more weeks of waiting? And so it was really seamless and I had no problems. And then my second pregnancy with my daughter was completely different. I kind of say she wrecked my body. It was not fast.
Yeah.
I was seeing physio when I was still in hospital. I was seeing physio postpartum. I really needed a lot of help. And it was just so fascinating that like me, same person, if anything, yes. I exercised more during my second pregnancy. And it was just like what it takes for the body can be so different and it's out of your control, you know, what your timeline back is going to be.
Aren't you glad that you had that as a second experience instead of a first?
My first, absolutely. Yes.
But it's almost not fair when you had the easy first one because then you're kind of lured into having the second.
I was like, of course this is easy. Like, I have no problems. Bad. Yeah.
This isn't bad.
Yeah.
For you, like, how did your training change? Because you were mostly in your athletic career before your kids, right?
I was, yeah. Yeah, I was still training up through my PhD and I did some racing the beginning part of my PhD. And then COVID really hit and it was kind of like, I'm kind of done training. I'm focusing on my PhD and my husband and I are like, we're ready for family life now.
Yeah. Is he a runner as well?
He's also a runner. Yeah.
Which you guys meet in college?
We did meet in college. Yep. Aww. Both University of Colorado track team. Yep.
Okay. So no running there at all.
Yeah, there's no running there. I've never heard of any runners come from that program. Yeah.
Did you come from a running family or no?
Athletic family for sure. Yeah.
Okay. And siblings that run or no?
I'm an only child. So who knows? Maybe.
Now, because I don't think we had steeplechase growing up. Remind everybody what that is.
Okay. Steeplechase is that crazy event they show on ESPN when someone falls in that water pit. So there are 5 giant barriers. They don't fall over. You hurdle them. And then there's one that's followed by a 12-foot long pit of water and it's 2 feet deep at the bottom and then it's kind of tapered up and you'll see runners go, they'll do one leg off it, jump, land in the water, and sometimes they fall. And that's how people know the steeplechase.
Where does that, like, why water?
I think they probably think it's fun. Yeah. I've read a bunch of different things of saying where steeplechase comes from, like cross country, running to the steeple of a church. So,
okay.
Yeah.
And how did you decide you wanted to do the water one?
Yeah. In short, my coach said, I think you could be a good steeplechaser. I come from a background of alpine ski racing.
Okay.
And he kind of thought like I might be like kind of fearless. He's like, if you could go down a mountain at those kind of speeds, I think you're not going to be afraid of barriers or a water jump.
Okay.
In short, I was a terrible hurdler and he kind of thought about, you know, just scrapping the whole idea.
Yeah.
And then we were at the track and he's like, do you want to just go try a water jump? And I think I went and did it twice. And he just looked at me and he said, you're a steeplechaser. And
oh,
it was
interesting.
Like, yeah, it was like, he just watched 2 water jumps where I didn't really know what I was doing. And he was like, yeah, you can be a steeplechaser.
Because it's not completely hurdling, right? Like are you allowed to put your foot on the thing?
Yeah, you normally put your foot on it. Yeah. And you want to accelerate into it, which is kind of weird. So, and most people want to slow down when they see it, but you need to run even faster into it and then jump onto it and then launch 1 foot off.
Got it.
Yeah.
No, I think it was in seventh grade, they tried to get me to do hurdles. And my mom said, no, we're not doing this. Because this is back in the day when there's the cinder track. And my mom just had these, I was kind of a klutz. She had these visions of like me face down, like hands full of cinder. And I don't regret any of that.
yeah. No.
So no, if we had cinder track, we're definitely not going to have water. So
yeah.
So in high school, you were even doing all of that.
And then there was no steeplechase in high school. Okay. So I was just running. Yeah.
And then from college, then what?
From college, I ended up running post-collegiately professionally for 3 or 4 years, 5 years. I can't even remember anymore. 13 to 18, 4 years. I did 4 years of professional running after. And then following the 2018 season, I decided that I hadn't renewed a contract and I thought I'm ready to go start a PhD. And my husband and I moved up to British Columbia, Vancouver, Canada, at the University of British Columbia. And running's been a little bit on the back burner since.
Yeah. How much longer in the postdoc?
You know, I'm not sure. Like, it's fun here. Like, there's so many different and there's so many resources. I was like, I can see why postdocs stay a while here.
Keep going. Yeah.
Yeah. So.
Yeah, exactly. Yeah. No, I have a lot of friends that I think we'd love to do those research questions, but we love clinical care so much. I think we have all these ideas, but not enough time to put it into kind of application and whatnot.
Yes.
But like with any of kind of the questions that you run across, I know I kind of mentioned our chicken and pressure and things like that. Like with your background, is that anything that has ever come up about that correlation between breath and pelvic floor and that kind of stuff? Or is that completely?
You know, I think the first thing that came to mind was during labor, it was my family doctor who's actually there with me in labor. And she said, she was trying to explain to me how to breathe. And I thought, I want to increase my diaphragmatic pressure. And I knew exactly how to do that. And it was okay. Just so, like, kind of things like that kind of click into place sometimes. Like, I know what, you know, because we'll go in and we'll measure the pressure across the diaphragm.
Right.
And so I was like, okay, I'm going to generate more pressure down there. And
right.
So things like that, I guess, come into play or come up like that for me.
Yeah. It's funny. I used to work at Georgetown University Hospital and we had a lot of speech therapists and they get that quite a bit because again, trying to vocalize and generate kind of, you know, pressures and things like that. It's interesting where you can start to pull those pieces together it's not until you have those conversations where you're in another context, we're like, oh, that does go there. Cause we're not ever taught that there's those connections.
Yes, exactly.
And especially kind of as an athlete, I'm sure you weren't thinking about your intra-abdominal pressure at all.
No, exactly. When would that come into play? Yeah.
Right. Exactly. Exactly. Yeah. So you studied a little bit about sex differences and things like that. Talk to me a little bit about kind of some of the things that you're studying there.
Yeah. So sex differences was something that was, until I got to my PhD work, I just kind of always assumed, you know, what we find for men is kind of similar for women. Mm-hmm. And I kind of say now that I was maybe a little naive during my master's to question why we weren't testing women. And that's okay, right? Everything's a learning experience.
The patriarchy.
I know. I actually go back and I look at all the studies I did and very few had females in them.
Right.
And a lot of it was just kind of, you know, what we had. And so men were easier to pull in.
Right.
But then I got to my PhD work and we had a lot of interest in what are actually the sex differences between men and women. And one thing we look at in the respiratory system a lot is that women have smaller lungs and smaller airways than men, even when you match them for height. So if you have a 6-foot woman and a 6-foot man, the woman's still going to have smaller lungs and smaller airways. Yeah. And so it's a real sex difference and you can't explain it from height. Or even if you look at just torso height to take away the legs or something.
Why? Like, is there kind of like a biological reason or anything?
Well, so actually getting back to pregnancy is additionally with the smaller lungs and airways is the ribcage shape is different.
Yep.
And one postulated hypothesis is that we need that shape to be a little different and higher up.
Right.
So when a woman has a baby, she can actually have expansion for the belly.
Right. No, that does make sense.
Possibly. Yeah.
Okay. No, my oldest, he had his butt like stuck right up under my right rib cage for a very long time. And my car was stick shift. And so I literally had to be kind of off to the side because he was jammed up there to try. And oh my gosh, it was so not fun.
Yeah. Yeah. I had a foot up here for a long time. I could feel her foot. I was like, move that down.
Oh
yeah.
My goodness. So smaller lungs, what else?
Smaller airways. And so then, okay. So we have structural sex differences. Mm-hmm. What is the functional impact of that? So a lot of times if we look at a given ventilation, a woman has to generate more mechanical work for that ventilation.
Mm.
I know, not great. Also, what does that mean from a metabolic sense? It probably means they're also using more metabolic energy for that ventilation too. So kind of structural sex differences leading to functional implications during exercise.
So what would that translate into for like the average woman? They would need to do more of what?
I don't know if we can actually change our structure, so that's a little hard.
Right.
Why I think it's important, though, is when we notice these sex differences, it might give us an idea of like target interventions. Mm-hmm. So we'll see that women tend to use more of these upper rib cage muscles to breathe compared to some of the lower respiratory muscles. And so I think maybe just knowing those sex differences might help us, you know, hey, if we're going to do respiratory muscle therapy with a woman, let's target, you know, our scalenes or something instead of, you know, lower muscles or something.
Gotcha. That's interesting because in PT, I don't know how familiar you are with we have things that I'm sure like in a lot of fields that you kind of latch on for a while that are popular, but we don't really have any, you know, evidence to support it. And there's a thing going right now about addressing postpartum rib flare and how it's causing all these problems. And I don't think it's like, I don't know. I have thoughts on it because, you know, women, our rib cages, they are meant to kind of do this, but it's not like we're, you know, slinkies and we're going to go right back after.
Okay. I already love that because like, yes, we talked about how the rib cage expands out. Mm-hmm. I don't know what the postpartum timeline is for that rib cage to come back or if it ever goes
or
back.
Or does.
Right. Yeah. And I don't, exactly. And no one has looked at that yet. Yeah.
Well, and I think that's the interesting thing, especially when you're looking at, I mean, I feel like 2023 was definitely the year of the postpartum runner pro-wise. 2024, I think, is going to smash it. That we have all these women functioning at such a high level. I doubt any of them are concerned about their rib flare. Like, quite honestly, like it's not, I'm pretty sure it's not on the radar screen. No. So that's where I'm like, do we need to get in the weeds on some of this stuff? Or, you know, is it just something that we're noticing and okay, but we can obviously still function quite well. Mm-hmm. But it's different than our, you know, pre-pregnancy body. And is that okay?
Like, yes, just because something's different doesn't mean we have to fix it if it's not bothering. Yeah. Yeah.
No, I that's where I kind of wrap my head around, you know, I think a lot of it too, like people want to correct things. They want to fix things. They want to get it back. And I'm like, maybe that wasn't the plan.
Yes. Like, yep. Mm-hmm. No, I'm totally with you. People are trying to correct symmetries. I'm like, well, maybe it's okay to have some asymmetry sometimes. Just a little's okay, maybe. Exactly. You know?
Well, and that's the thing that when you actually start paying attention to how asymmetrical we really are.
Mm-hmm.
But again, you know, and you might have run into this a little bit with your athletic career. There was definitely a period of time when looking at gait mechanics and things like that, you know, you want to be super efficient and whatnot. But I always say, you know, watch some of these like ultra, like these super fast, you know, marathoners from other countries and their gait looks nasty,
yes.
But clearly they're really fast.
They're fast. And if they're staying injury free, then.
Right.
Yeah.
Right. So is there this perfect running form? And I don't think there is. And I think there's more data kind of coming out looking at that. Yeah. And again, like maybe that, you know, we don't need to have our ribs in this certain place later on.
Yeah, is there really an issue? That's kind of the question.
Right.
Yeah.
Yeah. No, so I'm just making a list of things for you to study.
Thank you.
That's what I'm here for.
I'll write them all down.
Clinicians are really good at, we're like, well, what about this? And what about that? The problem is, for you guys to answer that question takes like several years per question.
It does, yeah.
And it gets very frustrating for us because you guys aren't going fast enough. And we're not willing to step out there to get our PhD.
Like I was trying to explain to someone how long it takes to get a study through like IRB Institutional Review Board ethical approval. And then you have to like recruit them and do the study. Then you got to write it up. And then it has to go through peer review. And like, we're on a couple years here now. Like it's not, Right. Good science isn't fast. Is the
and
answer.
It's not like you're getting paid for the paper in the journal either. You're paying for
it. Like, it's totally backwards.
No, it's not like you got an extra $1 million because you published.
Exactly. Yeah.
Mm-hmm. No, definitely. But no, going back to kind of pulling this back together with your paper, it's like, okay, well, maybe if your rib cage gets bigger after pregnancy, get a different size bra.
Yeah. And especially with breast changing too. I had a lot of breast discomfort with my firstborn. And it was probably because I was back running really fast, really quickly. Mm-hmm. And I had these giant breasts I had never dealt with before.
Yep.
I had never dealt with like boob slap or something before. And I was like, this is uncomfortable. And I was double braing and like everything. And I spent a lot of money on bras that pregnancy.
Well, I think that's the thing too. Like I remember in pregnancy for my first, I bought one nursing bra and thinking that this was going to be my nursing bra. And then you get, you know, a week or so postpartum, you're like, oh, that doesn't fit. You have no sense of what's going to fit and what's going to be comfortable. And it's constantly changing. Yes. And it gets expensive.
It does. Yeah.
It gets expensive. And then, you know, you get milk stains on everything and it gets all ratty. But then you find that one that you're like, all right, this one feels comfortable. And you wear that till you're like.
I'm so glad that was also someone else's experience.
Mm-hmm. No, yeah. 100%. 100%. Yeah. And then you have your old, like, your cute little, you know, Victoria's Secret bras from like your 20s. And like those don't
ever getting back out.
No, they just need to go in the trash.
Yeah.
they need to go in the trash.
Yeah. Yeah. Like remembering that the female is going to change over the lifespan is really important.
Yeah.
Yeah.
But I think also too, understanding that you're, you know, you make that purchase and that's just going to be a short-term thing. It's okay that like at this, and this is what I tell my moms all the time that are pregnant. I was like, go ahead and get one. So you have it to wear home, but do not buy.
Until you know.
Because you're not going to know. Just like I was an idiot. I thought that if I bought one like set of maternity clothes, like halfway through my pregnancy, that was going to get me through to the end. No. We got to be flexible here. We got to be flexible
here. Exactly. Yeah.
So for you, kind of what's next? Now that you've got this, like what's the feedback first of all, that you've gotten from the paper so far?
Yeah. I've had a lot of people ask me, what does a heart rate monitor do? And
oh, really?
Yeah. A lot of people have been like, well, a lot of males say, you know, I don't wear a bra, but I do wear a heart rate.
Get me next time where I'm not sipping.
Yeah. Like they say, no, I don't wear a bra, but you know, I kind of understand that because I wear a tight heart rate strap. Mm. And I say probably in theory, the same thing happens, but maybe even on smaller magnitude. Mm-hmm. We know a bra actually compresses the chest in multiple planes.
Right. So
maybe possibly a little bit, maybe harder to quantify scientifically those smaller differences. Mm-hmm. And then kind of like I alluded to earlier, men and women actually breathe differently. So I'm a little too hesitant to apply our results directly to men. But yeah, it's not out of the question. Heart rate strap, maybe slightly, very slightly.
They just want our stuff. We've had to do their stuff for so long. They just want ours.
Yeah. My colleague and I talked about, maybe we should do a study where we put bras on men who aren't, you know, used to it. What would happen there? And
a lot of things. I think they even talked about your study on, Karen Dez's podcast.
Oh, I think someone told me that. Yeah.
Yeah. No, was it Nobody Asked Us? And they're hysterical, by the way. But I'm like, sweet.
I love them.
I'm talking to her next week. I think you really hit on not so much about, I think it's about the sports bra. And we're just tired of we're tired of the sports bra. We're tired of things not fitting and accommodating us. And I don't think there's any more options than I feel like there's so many options that we have now, and it's almost too much.
Yeah. Everyone says, so what's the best sports bra? And I go, probably one that fits properly, and we have to do our best there. I don't think there's one brand that's better than another.
But I like your advice of like, go and practice heavy breathing, which might be awkward in the
it really might be, but yeah, trying to get to some of those maximal ventilations and feel what that bra feels like restricting when you're
taking a big breath. Mm-hmm. Yeah. But I think other things too, that we don't think about, like, you know, where are you going to use it? So I actually, I have one bra that I only use for CrossFit because it's not as supportive and I don't feel like I need as much when I'm there as opposed to like running or something like that. But I think, you know, practice with your arms overhead, practice. I think we understand like pumping up and down. I think we get it from a chafe perspective. Like we're all comfortable with that concept, but again, like I think it's a newer thing, but you really resonated with people being like, I'm tired of this tight band. I'm tired of it digging into my shoulders. Yeah. I'm just this, but it's also not enough to say, get the neck size up.
So another thing I think women could play around with, and you see companies do this, is that underband can sit in different positions down your chest.
Right.
And so maybe if you have one that's too high up, maybe if you try an extended bra down, maybe that's more comfortable on you. Mm-hmm. And I'm sure it's like glasses. There's no one pair that's good for one person. Everyone's going to need something slightly different. So you could try around with, you know, different sizes and then different placements of that underband too.
Yep. And back to kind of the straps too. I mean, like, I think there's some that are more strappy and, you know, have the cute little designs in the back, and there's others that are thicker. And I think, again, we get that from the context of support of our boobs, but maybe not so much about combining that with like where the strap hits around kind of the rib cage. It's like, because that combination really does kind of set it all into play. If it's too tight up here and too tight down there, everything's going to be, you know. Yeah, exactly. Yeah. Exactly. Yeah. But yeah, I'm excited to buy a new bra, but I'm kind of dreading it. I'm not going to lie.
I know. And I don't think you should do it online. I think you need to go in.
I know. And that's what I was thinking about that. I was like, yeah, and it used to be before the pandemic, there were very, very, clear times during the day where I knew people weren't going to be in a store that I could just go in and get done quickly and get out, because I'd have a toddler with me inevitably. Yes. And now, because everybody's working from home, that time is not clear anymore. So I want my time back that I know that nobody's going to be there and they can get in and out very quickly. Yes. No, because you know, you go in a store with a toddler, you're on the clock.
Yeah. And, it's a ticking time bomb.
Well, and trying on a bra, it's again, like, you kind of have to put aside like a while, because you've got a lot of things to work through. And if you have a ticking time bomb, those two things don't work. So those of you that have stores with bras, if you have childcare, that would be really great.
That would be ideal.
That would be wonderful. Yeah. That would be really wonderful. Okay. So what's next? Are you going to keep going down the bra line? Are you looking at other stuff?
You know, I wish I was going more down the bra line, probably not right now. So one thing I should say is, like, to do science, someone needs to fund it, you know, or you can't just kind of do all the science for fun. And so I am really thankful that Lululemon wanted to fund that science, because without companies that do that, we don't do that kind of science. And then women don't get those answers. Mm-hmm. No, I probably will start looking at some more clinical populations, but I'm not going to forget this kind of stuff. And then definitely still studying the woman throughout the lifespan is really important to me. And I do want to do more pregnancy work. Maybe that's the short of it.
Oh my gosh. Come hang out with us, because we have like a zillion questions. And I think, because again, physio is we're pretty female dominant field, especially in pregnancy, postpartum health. And so many more people are going into female athlete kind of venues, that we're getting far more kind of good questions and good researchers and that kind of stuff. So hang out with us. We're a lot of fun too.
Okay.
So to go back with the Lululemon thing, like, did they have the idea for the study and you guys were like, hey, we'll do it? Or how did that all play out?
So Lululemon is headquartered in Vancouver, where I went to school. In short, I posted a video of some other respiratory physiology we were doing, and you know, they knew who my advisor was, and they reached out to him and said, hey, would you guys want to collaborate on anything? Oh. And he said, yeah, I think I have a student that has some ideas. And they said, great, let's hear them. And they were kind of open for anything. They kind of just wanted to do some more, you know, bra research on women. And they said, yeah, sounds great. You know, that's an interesting question. And we went from there. Yeah.
That's really interesting, especially because they just had
the further. Oh my gosh. I want like more people to start talking about that. That was freaking phenomenal.
That was insane. The things that like that occurred there, all the records that Camille
Heron is incredible.
But even just watching just the support of the women, I'm sure, you know, the clothing obviously, and the gear was part of what they were studying and whatnot, but it looked hot there during the day too.
Sure did, yeah.
So talking about sports bras, like, how's the chafe, you know?
I mean, we haven't even touched on like thermoregulation with sports bras too. Like, it's a whole extra layer of clothing that women have that men don't.
Right. Well, and they had these, I kind of briefly, everybody was posting about it, or at least in my algorithm. And, you know, people were talking about, okay, well, what kind of gear is going to be for sale and what is not? And people are like, why aren't the ice vests going to be for sale?
That's what we all want.
Right. Exactly. People want the ice vests. No, but I do love how inclusive they were on that. I mean, with just like people from everywhere and different body sizes and shapes and abilities and things like that to be out there. 2.5 mile loop, I think, would have driven me a little bit insane. I don't know. Like,
it's a mindset for those women. I'm impressed.
Yeah. But
they're doing some cool science there too.
I was going to say, how much do you know about, cause I know they had like a little tunnel that they kind of went through and then they were also doing glucose monitoring and they were tracking all of their food and fluid intake and what they were wearing and like literally every piece of data. Like, how much did
what
you
questions
kind of nerd out?
Yeah. I'm not sure, but they did bring in some really good scientists.
Okay. Oh, that's good to know.
Because I know some good data will come out from that.
Okay.
Yeah.
Are there other companies that you know of that are kind of doing this thing where like, hey, we're really interested in more kind of female research or just more what we need?
In short, no. For their own athletes, I think almost every, at least shoe company for runners does something to that extent.
Yeah.
But putting it out for the masses and answering more of these basic physiology questions, I can't think. Yeah.
Yeah. When you were a sponsored athlete, who was your sponsor?
Yeah. I ran for Wazelle.
Yeah.
And then I was partnered with Adidas for a while.
Mm-hmm.
And I kind of love that because I was with them and I was doing a research for Nike. So my life is so funny. I'm like walking around in Adidas shoes and we're testing Nike shoes. Yeah. So it's kind of,
oh geez.
Funny in my life. Yeah.
Awkward.
Yeah. No. If anything, I think it was good because that was when we found that the Nike Vaporfly 4% came out and we were showing how incredible it was. And it was like, I'm not even on the Nike team. And, you know, I'm kind of saying these results are real. So if anything, I thought it gave more credit to the story.
I see. Okay. Yeah. Do you have an opinion on the super shoes for the average person?
You know, training is probably always the most important thing to do. And then if you want a little extra boost, I think almost all the super shoes are on a level playing field these days. So I don't think there's one that's superior, like 8 years ago when Nike really was at the top of the field. I think they're all about the same now.
Yeah. Do you wish we would go back to the days where it wasn't about the shoe, or are you happy that we're in?
So I'm so torn on that because I'm a scientist, right?
Right.
And like, to me, like Nike coming up with this new shoe and, you know, new foam that's super, you know, compliant and resilient, like that was someone like me doing their job and trying to figure out what would actually help improve performance. And then everyone's upset that we've actually improved performance. And you're like, but shoes 20 years ago have changed. Like, why? It's just that we had such a large jump. People got upset. And part of me is like, no, that scientist was like me, you know, we're just trying to, what kind of technology can we do? And so I'm very torn. Yeah.
Yeah. Well, I think also too, like when you talk about it kind of trickling down to the masses, like, is it, you know, does it put other kids, like high school kids or something, at an advantage over other ones, which like where I live in the DC area, there's definitely a lot of that. So if mom and dad can buy you the fast shoe.
Yeah. I mean, and that's why running was such a great sport, right? It was kind of, you know, level for all the kids at high school, but that is a little upsetting to think, you know, we can buy some time for our kids.
Right. Right. But I do think we all need bras though. I forget there's a foundation that they were, oh my gosh, I'm going to drive myself nuts trying to remember this. They were trying to get kids earlier access to sports bras to get girls access. Oh, it's going to drive me nuts that I can't remember what this was. But the idea was that a lot of girls stop sports at a young age because of their breasts.
Yes.
And it was the idea that if we get them something that fits well, so maybe we need to figure out where that is and get you guys all connected. As if we get it
really
fit
good idea.
Well early, then we decrease that barrier to getting involved in sport. But then you've also educated that person on, hey, this is what this is supposed to be like. It's not supposed to be boob smashing, you know, can't breathe, you know, you're going to strangle yourself getting out of the shower situation. It should be, you know, comfortable and not this like restricting sort of thing.
100%. Yeah. This would retain more women in sports, more girls.
Right.
In sports.
Yeah. Oh, that's going to drive me nuts. I'm going to have to think about that and get back to you. Okay. Yeah. We'll have to do that. I'm in the wrong file cabinet in my head. This is what happens when you perimenopause. It's coming. Okay. At the end of every episode, I ask my guests a couple of different questions. So we'll start with this one. Either a book you're reading or a podcast that you're listening to right now.
Oh, right now?
Or in all your free time,
one I would
have
said Christine Yu's like Up to Speed book is phenomenal.
Yes.
Currently right now I'm reading Tea by Carol. Oh, I forgot her last name. It's about testosterone in sport, but it's called Tea. That's what I'm actually reading right now.
What have you learned about tea? What have you learned about
I didn't realize how controversial the scientific world was on testosterone in athletic performance. To me, it was always very straightforward. It's a performance enhancing steroid. It's banned. And I didn't actually realize some of the nuance and some of the history behind why we like to say it's not. And so it's interesting. That's what I'm reading right now.
Oh, interesting. So testosterone in my field comes up a lot with libido and sexual health.
Yep.
Which is very interesting. It's really hard. It's actually easier to get your OBGYN to give you a referral for HRT or vaginal estrogen than it is to get kind of a prescription for testosterone.
Interesting.
Which we could have a whole other podcast on that. The other context in which I have seen it come up, I briefly was looking at a study that was talking about sex differences in those with long COVID, and they did find that potentially there was something there in testosterone. And again, like people don't realize, like we're taught as kids, like estrogen's for girls, testosterone's for boys. That's not true. Everybody has both. And so people don't make that connection. So I think, you know, back to your sex differences, again, I have more studies for you to do. We need to be paying attention to all this stuff. There's definitely a difference. Definitely a difference. Okay. Yeah. So you recommend the book? It's a good book?
It's good kind of heavy. I'm about 3/4 of the way through. That's what I'm reading right now.
Okay. I'm guessing it's not lighthearted. I'm guessing it's a little...
It's a little thicker. Yeah.
Okay. Got it. We will not save that for the pool. All right. Favorite activity since becoming a mom?
Ooh. So I have a 2.5-year-old. I also really like to cook. And we got him a little tower and he likes to cook with me. And I've got to say, it's my favorite thing when he wants to cook with mom or bake with mom.
That's so
and
sweet.
And we probably make like cookies or brownies like too many times a week because
as you goes, should.
I want to bake something, mom. And I'm like, sure, let's go bake something. So I didn't know that I was going to love sharing that with my son. And I really do.
Oh, well, if it makes you feel any better, my oldest, he likes to cook Thanksgiving dinner with me and he likes to make Christmas cookies. And I think that started when we started baking when he was little. So that's all coming ahead of you.
Okay, I'm looking forward to that.
Yeah. All right. One piece of advice for new moms, and you can say get a new bra.
Yeah, I'd say get a new one, but also, you know, wait a bit.
Yes.
Because your boobs change sizes throughout pregnancy and throughout breastfeeding, which I wasn't aware of.
Yes.
That's probably my biggest one for them. Yeah.
Yeah.
Yeah. Cut yourself some slack too. You don't need to exercise, right? You know, there's been a lot of very impressive performances by postpartum women, and I'm so glad we're celebrating them, but don't think that is the standard you need to reach.
I'm so glad to hear you say that for a couple of reasons. One, again, like it's been such a banger of a year and a half of women coming out and performing like
impressive
gangbusters. But what I am hearing more stories about are these moms that they're performing, but they're also kind of having words of caution like, hey, you know what? Dealt with stress fractures first time around. And I heard Rachel Drake, who's an ultra marathoner, on a podcast recently. And she was saying, you know, if I had to do over again, I would wait till my kid was in solids and eating solids before I started back again. She's like, it's just not a race. You don't need
it's
to do
a race. It's not a race. Yeah. Your goal is to come back healthy, not quickly.
Yeah. And I think it's such a juxtaposition for the average person to be inspired, but also then heed the words of warning. But again, I think you're in an easier place to hear that after your second, but after your first, like, did you feel like you had something to prove or?
Yeah, I think everyone does. And I don't know why.
I don't know either. Next study, or is that psych? That's not your realm. That's not your realm. All right. Who's somebody in your space? It doesn't necessarily have to be pregnancy, postpartum, but like, who's something in your, somebody in your space that you're totally like, you know, gangbusters about right now?
Oh, well, I think you already know this person. But Margie Davenport, University of Alberta, I would fangirl around her. Like, she does fantastic work in pregnancy. Mm-hmm. Yeah. Follow her on Instagram.
Yep.
Also, Rita Deering also is another good one for postpartum. Yep. I think those women are great. And if you're going through it, they post some good words of wisdom and some good science. Yeah.
So, okay. So I have a request now, since you already know these ladies, I think you guys should do a collab on something. If you need ideas of what to come up with, I'm volunteering to spit out some ideas. But I mean, and that's where I love kind of being in this space, is like, you have a respiratory expertise. They have this other expertise, that there would be an awesome mashup, but to kind of answer some of these clinical questions and assumptions and stuff that we have, on the ground. So, yes, please. If you guys could do a mashup, I would be super excited about that.
they're already trickling in my head for sure.
Yay. Good, good, good. Yeah. Margie's coming back on, in a couple weeks, and then, cause she's been on before, and then we've had Rita on. So yeah.
Incredible leader in field. Yeah.
Oh my gosh. Stupid smart too. Yeah. So, love that. All right. And then last one, for you, what does it mean to you to be an active mom in postpartum?
Yeah. I want to be like, active is like whatever I can get done that day. Like yesterday I thought I was going to get out for a run, and like, I even had my running shoes on and my shorts, and then it just didn't happen. Mm-hmm. And so active can really be just, even I got done like with a 10-minute strength session, and it was like, hey, I exercised today. So I've definitely lowered my bar in postpartum.
I love that.
Active is like, hey, I just did some of my physio. I didn't even do it, you know, twice. I did it once in a day, and you know, giving myself a pat on the back. So
I love being that, though.
As anything, really.
Thank you for saying that, though, because again, I think people have this vision of, you know, you were a pro athlete, and you know, you're a researcher, and you're doing all these things. And the fact of the matter, this stuff is hard.
You can't do it all. And so I just kind of say, like, yeah, it was like 5 p.m. and I was like making dinner. I was like, oh, I'm not actually running today, am I? And it was like, you know what? I'll do, you know, my bands and some core, and I did it. And
I love that.
Moving on to the next day. So
yes, love it. Well, thank
active
you.
Has changed.
Yes. No, but here's the thing too. Again, older kids, you're going to have a lot more time and space, but what you'll be doing, like, is you'll be taking, while everybody's at their practice, you're going to be doing laps. You're going to hop out on the trails. You're going to be doing all these different things. So it's coming. It's coming.
I'm looking forward to that.
I bet you are. All right. If you want to see more about her research and follow along with her, you can find her on Instagram, Shalaya Kipp. Thank you so much.
Thanks so much for having me.
Talking about sports bras, because clearly we have opinions, but then sharing this on the podcast with us today. Thanks for being on.
Thanks so much for having me.
Did you enjoy the podcast? If so, leave us a 5-star review on iTunes and tell a friend to do the same. Are you a postpartum mom or postpartum pro wanting to know more about getting back to running after baby? Check out all my free goodies on carriepagliano.com. This podcast represents the opinions of Dr. Carrie Pagliano and her guests to the show. The content should not be taken as medical advice and is for entertainment purposes only. Always consult your healthcare professional for any medical questions.